Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. The widening impact of the federal government's partial shutdown is being felt here in New Hampshire. First, there are the federal employees who aren't being paid, cutting back on spending and fearing the prospect of not being able to pay the bills. Then there are federal programs and contracts that aren't being fulfilled, putting strain on private companies and some public services. Today in The Exchange, gauging the shutdown in the Granite State. Let's hear your stories and your questions. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Now, we're going to talk with New Hampshire-based guests this hour, but let's begin with the latest from D.C., and joining us now is NPR's Ron Elving. He's senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk for NPR News. Ron, thanks for helping us out, and good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good to be with you, Laura.
Well, the shutdown, Ron, is a huge story in D.C., I'm sure, itself, and the suburban states, Maryland and Virginia. But what about the rest of us, Ron? What kind of impacts are you hearing about beyond the Beltway?
You know, Laura, 80% of the people who work for the federal government are not in the Washington, D.C. area, and almost 100% of the people who are affected by government programs live somewhere other than in Washington, D.C. These programs are ubiquitous. They're something in every state, not just parks, but also a lot of the programs that people depend on that the government administers. Some of the ones that seem to be affected most at this time are not necessarily the people who are in any sense the target of this shutdown, but ancillary damage, if you will, people who are in the line of fire. So, for example, the Transportation Security Administration, which checks you out at the airport, TSA.
Right.
We don't enjoy it, but we do rely on it, and I think everybody wants to feel safe. Plus, some of the inspectors who work for the Federal Aviation Administration are also not showing up for work. So because transportation is included in the shutdown, some of the people who are considered essential and should be considered essential are not, for one reason and another, coming to work, calling in sick, what have you, and that has begun to affect operations. So real question marks being raised around that, as well as a number of other government functions.
Well, just backing up, Ron, I'm really struck by what you said, so I'd love for you to repeat it. 80% of federal workers, is that what you said, don't live in the D.C. area, meaning D.C., Maryland, and Virginia?
That's right. We're the highest concentration of federal government workers, to be sure. But they are more or less everywhere. And there are large federal operations in Kansas City and Denver and various other parts of the country that have hundreds of thousands of employees. So when you spread out across the entire country, the 800,000 government workers who are living without pay right now, about half of whom are actually coming to work, the others of whom are told they don't have to come into work, when you spread those people out across the country, it begins to distribute the impact. And of course, let's bear in mind that just about anyone in the United States might be affected by some of these programs if they're waiting to get a loan from the Federal Housing Administration, or they're waiting to get approval on some sort of a loan. Or conceivably, we don't know how long this is going to go on, but if it goes on much longer, question marks have been raised about food stamps, and question marks have been raised about the full service of the IRS, because Treasury Department is part of the shutdown and IRS is part of Treasury.
Well, and as we're talking about federal employees, who's working, who isn't, in the interest of full disclosure, and I said this yesterday too, my husband works for the federal government, furloughed, not being paid. So we're part of this story, which is a little funny and awkward for me, but there it is. I want to put it out there.
And they are everywhere.
Yeah. So this is a partial government shutdown. We keep hearing that, Ron. So because different funding streams work in different ways. So there's a group of federal employees who are working without pay. There's a group that's at home not being paid. And then there's a group that is working, is getting paid. I mentioned this yesterday, too. I have a friend who works for Federal Highways. He's getting paid because that's a whole different funding stream. So there's another category there, Ron, right?
That's right, because they have fees and they have other than congressional appropriations to depend on. Look, there are a dozen appropriations bills that are supposed to go through Congress every year. And a handful of them were not finished this year, partly because there were negotiations going on around just one department. And that, of course, was the Department of Homeland Security. And this, of course, relates to the president's demands for a wall and the fact that it was not possible to get it through Congress during the first 2 years. And as the Republican majority in the House was on its way out the door in late December, they decided that they would not pass these appropriations as negotiated and that they would give the president the opportunity to have a confrontation with the Democrats in the Senate first and now, of course, the Democrats in the House, where they're actually a majority, over whether or not to fund the wall project that he has in mind.
So the politics of this, Ron, and that's your specialty, it sounds like they haven't changed at all.
They don't seem to change much. Of course, people are polling every day on this question. The White House is quite eager to see the numbers turn around. But at this point, between 50 and 60% of the people polled in various polls, lots of different kinds of polls, between 50 and 60% are saying they either blame the president or they blame the Republicans in Congress. Most of them are saying the president. A few are saying not the president so much, but his allies in Congress are responsible for this. About a third of the country, about 32%, 33%, 34% in that range, are saying, no, it's those Democrats who won't give the president what he wants. They're to blame. Now, that's been a pretty consistent polling result. And even though we're now almost through the third week of this shutdown, those numbers don't seem to be changing.
All right. Well, speaking of politics, Morning Edition spoke this morning with our own U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan, a Democrat. And she repeated the argument that Democrats have made since the shutdown began.
Should take up the bills that the House has passed to allow us to reopen the government. There's consensus that we could reopen the government in every area except border security, for instance, and continue to work on that.
Okay, again, that's U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan. Today in the exchange, we are looking at the New Hampshire impact and the New Hampshire response to this partial government shutdown. Of course, we'd love to hear your stories. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Just a few more questions for you, Ron Elving, please, and then I'll go to our New Hampshire guests. Democrats, we just heard from Maggie Hassan there, are united against giving the president what he wants. What are Republicans on Capitol Hill saying, Ron, about this widening economic impact from the shutdown?
By and large, Republicans have stood with the president, but we had a test vote in the House late yesterday, and on that vote, a handful of Republicans were willing to vote to reopen the government by approving the individual bills, other than for Homeland Security. That's the sticking point with the wall. And they were willing to open up all these other departments and essentially focus the problem on the problem. Only a handful, though, and we'll see if that number grows. There are rumors of there being as many as dozens, people who are threatening, people who are telling their leaders, we don't want to keep voting for this shutdown. The Democrats are going to bring one bill after another saying, let's open this department, let's open this department, let's open this department. And all the Democrats are going to vote for them. A few Republicans are going to vote for them. They're going to come out of the House with an easy majority. And when they get to the Senate, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican, has said he's not going to consider them. He's not going to consider any of those until the president gives him a green light and says, I'll sign that. And since the president has said he won't sign anything until he gets the wall, that's where we are. That's the impasse.
Wow. Okay. Ron, lots for you to follow up on. We really appreciate you taking some time this morning.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Ron Elving, senior editor and correspondent at the Washington Desk for NPR. Again, this hour in the exchange, we're looking at the government shutdown, how it's affecting the Granite State. By the way, if you want to go to our website, nhpr.org/exchange, there's an infographic on impacts around New Hampshire. There's a nice map there and also tons of information about federal agencies that are open or closed due to the shutdown. So it's again, it's nhpr.org/exchange. With me in studio to talk about this is Dante Scala, professor of political science at UNH and a fellow at the Carsey School of Public Policy. Dante, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also joining us from Hanover, Matt Slaughter, dean of the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. And Matt, thank you for coming back on the exchange. We really appreciate it, as always.
Thanks, Laura.
Well, Matt, to you first, how does an economist measure the economic impact, the dollars and cents, so far of the shutdown on New Hampshire? How do you gauge it?
Yeah, I'll start where Ron had a good insight about jobs. He pointed out there's 80% of the federal employees are not located in Washington, D.C. So if you look at the whole country overall, there's about 2.8 million total federal employees in America. If you take out the Postal Service, which currently is not affected by the shutdown, you have 2.2 million people in America that work for the federal government. So 800,000 people that are furloughed because of the shutdown, that's over one in three. You're getting close to half of all federal employees. And so you realize the breadth of how this shutdown is touching lots of communities and lots of parts of how our economy works. In terms of total jobs in the economy, we have about 150 million jobs in the economy today. So the furlough affects about one half of 1% of all the workers in America. But the impact extends beyond the jobs and the lost income, because as Ron pointed out, whether it's FHA loans, how Treasury and IRS is functioning, think of the scientists that do research at NASA and other places, the federal government touches so many aspects of so many businesses that as every day goes along, there's more and more families and more businesses, especially small businesses, that are starting to feel they can't be their best selves in terms of how the companies work and how families think about their day-to-day lives.
Well, it's interesting. There's been a lot of focus, as you said, on the employees and how they're coping without being paid. But you're right, Ron, there are other impacts that, you know, you might not think about. New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen said she spoke with state farmers last week about how the closure of the U.S. Department of Agriculture was affecting them. Let's hear.
They're not receiving essential services and loans they need to prepare for spring planting. And so many dairy farmers who have been under extreme hardship anyway because of the tariffs with China and falling dairy prices talked about what the impact is on them. Last year, New Hampshire dairy farmers lost $1 million because of the tariffs. And our farmers tell me they're in danger of losing several million more this coming year. And so they can't afford to have another hit.
Again, that's New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen talking about the impact of the partial government shutdown on farmers. And as we talk about elected officials and how they've been responding, we did get this statement from the governor's office, which says, quote, there have been minimal immediate impacts to state programs. However, longer term impacts will be felt depending on the length of the federal shutdown. Governor Sununu is receiving real-time updates from state agency heads and is monitoring the situation. So that's the statement from the governor. How do you measure it, Dante Scala? You're a political scientist, not an economist, but how do you gauge this big, big national story and its impact here on the Granite State?
Public opinion is most important here because typically what ends a government shutdown is when one side or another kind of cries uncle. Not because they reach some grand compromise, but because there's this blame game going on between the two sides. And one side wins and the other side loses. And the reason that happens is because the public makes a decision that this group or that group is predominantly to blame. So what I'm watching, you know, and again, this is an ongoing story that's going to be on the front pages, you know, each and every day this goes on, especially as things, as Matt said, get more severe, get more widespread felt and so forth. And so what I'm watching is, you know, when does the public render a verdict and say enough? And that could be slowly over time, or it could be something dramatic, you know, regarding, say, you know, shutdowns of our transportation system, you know, with the airlines and the airports and so forth. So that's what I'm watching is when is one side clearly to blame in the eyes of the public?
Well, and how do we gauge how the public feels? I mean, you know, you can do five different polls and get five different results, Dante.
Yeah, that's fair. Although, as Ron mentioned, right, so far at least, polling is consistent nationally that the predominance of the blame is going on President Trump as opposed to the Democrats in Congress. Now, will this week's events, including the president's address, make any difference to
and
that?
And his trip to the border today. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, we'll see whether that makes a difference or not. The president himself, ironically, said, I don't think any of this is going to make much of a difference, what I did this week. And I think there's actually some wisdom in that. It's difficult for the president to break through on this issue. The border wall is not especially popular, and it hasn't been for some time, and neither is this president. So it'll be interesting to see, and I think the real pressure point, if we're looking around New England, let's say, is to keep an eye on an incumbent Republican senator running for re-election next year, Susan Collins, up in Maine. And she is an interesting pressure point because she's going to be hearing from her constituents. And on the one hand, she wants to stick with her party. On the other hand, she's starting to think this could affect me and my status going forward into 2020.
Again, our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us with your questions, comments, and of course, your personal experiences with this issue is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're looking at the partial government shutdown and how it's affecting New Hampshire. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Matt and Dante, let's go right to our listeners. And Luke is joining us from where? Hi, Luke. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call, long-time listener and member.
Great. Go ahead,
Luke. I wanted to share the shutdowns had some immediate effect in that many people's holiday vacations were canceled. I represent and work for the FAA. I represent employees in the FAA in Nashua. Excuse me. One gentleman shared that he had plans to spend the holiday with his mother, who had lost her husband of 60 years. His leave was canceled when the shutdown happened. He wasn't able to do that. Then there are intermediate effects of financial. I spoke with employees last night in Bedford and heard one man just bought a house. His first payment is due. He's very concerned about that. Another family is delaying purchasing a house. They actually had a closing date and put it off because of the uncertainty. And another couple shared that both of them had been furloughed. They both work for the FAA. So this is having a real impact. People are worried that their health care benefits may not continue. If their premiums aren't made, they're worried about contributions to their 401ks. Additionally, this affects many careers long after the shutdown, as the FAA, the training academy, is shuttered. And that means critical training, in many cases, for employees to obtain certifications and pay increases will be delayed for months, maybe even years. We're still suffering from the setbacks of the 2013 shutdown. Members who spoke to me are also really furious with what they're hearing from the administration, from the comments of enjoy the ride to the guidance from OPM that we should barter with creditors by offering to paint or perform light carpentry work.
OPM is Office of Personnel Management. Yeah, and they sent out a letter, right, Luke, to federal employees saying,
they did.
Hey, if you have a hard time paying contractors or landlords, offer to, you know, do some side work for them while you're on furlough.
Too. Right.
Yeah.
And then more recently, employees have been receiving emails from the administration suggesting that we could be disciplined for sharing our views about the shutdown with the media or even on social media. So I want to make clear that I'm speaking on behalf of the professional aviation safety specialist today. I happen to be an employee with the FAA, but that's just for our own consideration. Most of our employees are really concerned that this has nothing to do with the critical work they perform in the national aviation system. We have a lot of veteran members. They've made a career of public service, and they can't understand why this is happening. They just want to do their jobs and provide a safest air traffic system that they can. And it makes no sense to anyone why we would go through this again. My understanding is the 2013 shutdown cost on something on the order of $24 billion. And if it goes past Saturday, we're going to be in the longest shutdown we've had. So our folks are, I have about 200 employees in New Hampshire who live in New Hampshire. And I can tell you that they're all very concerned about this.
Well, Luke, it's real interesting to hear from you. And, you know, I think a lot of people listening think, okay, well, FAA is still, you know, the air traffic controller is still in the job and TSA is still in the job. So, you know, we can still fly safely and reasonably. But you're saying there's stuff that isn't getting done, like training for the future, because of the shutdown. So there's more to it than just, are they on the job? Good. Yes. Check that box. Move on.
Well, there's a whole infrastructure. Of course, in any organization, people perform all sorts of support functions, some of them more direct or indirect. The agency's decision about who was furloughed and who was not furloughed, from our perspective, doesn't make a lot of sense in some cases. For example, the inspectors for the aircraft have been furloughed. They're not on the job. Now, the agency will say, well, we're sending other people in or we're calling them back to perform inspections. But other examples are, even for the folks who are reporting to work, there have been instances where some people were on the furlough list that we can't figure out why. And so we've had staffing effects, even for those folks who are showing up. But improvement projects have been suspended.
Improvement, what kind
the
of
data?
What does that mean exactly? Improving the way you direct traffic?
Systems, upgrading systems that were scheduled or being worked on. Those folks who are doing those, who aren't working on, if you will, the live air traffic control system, but are upgrading it for future use, those projects, in many cases, are suspended because those people were furloughed. Even the contractors, in many cases, have no one to work with because the government employees are furloughed. So it touches every aspect except for that those folks who are showing up and having to work without pay. But I can tell you, they're very frustrated. They're very concerned. Even though they are covered in the language of the law, as I understand it, that they are guaranteed to receive pay when the shutdown is over. Those folks that are sitting at home, there is no such guarantee.
Well, Luke,
again, there are very few non-important jobs. You know, if you can call it that, everything is a. From our perspective, is a critical function.
In aviation, sure. Just real quickly, and then I'll let you go. How many people work at that FAA facility in Nashua, right?
Right. It's around 450, 500 people. We represent 200 people in the state. But again, I don't represent the air traffic controllers. I represent the technical workforce.
Okay.
So we have 191 folks in
All right.
New Hampshire.
Well, Luke, I will let you go, and I really appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Again, that's Luke calling in, talking about his personal experience, talking about how the shutdown is affecting him and his colleagues, and talking about how, in the long term, it might affect air traffic control and air travel safety. Coming up, we'll take a lot more of your questions and comments, so keep them coming in. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll also hear from someone who works for TSA. So he is on the job screening people at the airport without pay. And we'll keep taking your questions and comments. All that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
New Hampshire Public Radio listeners are educated, engaged, and digitally savvy. As an NHPR underwriter, your business can reach this digital audience through our many podcasts, our e-newsletters, or at our award-winning news site, nhpr.org. Learn how you can reach the best and brightest online community in New Hampshire and beyond by visiting the business support page at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the impact of the federal shutdown in the Granite State. Let's get your questions and your own experiences into our conversation. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Joining us for the hour are Matt Slaughter, Dean of the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College, and Dante Scala, Professor of Political Science at UNH, and a fellow at the Carsey School of Public Policy. And gentlemen, before we go back to our listeners, I'd love your thoughts on some of the points that Luke, our caller, made. He works for the FAA. You can hear the frustration in his voice. And Matt, to you first, please. You know, he made an important point. He said there's no such thing, in his opinion, of non-essential work at the FAA. He talked about all the stuff that goes on, you know, sort of behind the scenes. And I wonder what you make of that.
Yeah, Luke shared a lot of insights, and I want to echo, I wrote down, listening to his reflections, frustrated, concerned. He's clear he's concerned about his employees. I think one of the costs we all need to keep in mind about the shutdown is to the morale of dedicated employees like Luke and our other citizens working throughout the federal government. We live in an environment where we have basically full employment in America today. It's 3.9% unemployment. So the federal government is no different from the company that your listeners work for, all of us, me at Dartmouth, where we're trying to attract really talented individuals that feel inspired by the mission of the organization and feel they can bring their best selves to work. The shutdown makes this much harder for the federal government to attract and retain those types of employees. The work, whether it's to keep our airplanes flying safely, I flew yesterday. I made sure to thank going through TSA in Manchester last night, all the TSA agents that were there. But we know that Luke really put his finger on something important, which is you've got colleagues that are maybe rethinking, is this the right career for me? Or young people coming out of school and they look at the federal government and they say, is this the kind of organization that I want to work for? So it's a little harder to quantify the cost of that, but it's very real. And our federal government keeps us safe. They do research to build our future for the country. There's so many vital functions the federal government does that the value of ending the shutdown sooner is really important for this insight that Luke articulated about the morale of the workforce in the federal government.
Yeah, Dante, I wonder what you think, too, about the politics of what Luke told us. And picking up on what Matt said, federal employees like Luke did get this email from the Office of Personnel Management saying, you know, here's a template for you to write a letter to your landlord if you can't make rent. You can explain the situation to him or her, and you can offer to do, you know, chores around the apartment building.
Right. I mean, there, you know, the president often says, well, all of these federal workers who are on furlough, they're calling me or they're contacting us and they're saying, we're with you on this. And I think what we're going to be seeing in, you know, in story after story that plays out in local newspapers and radio stations and television news is, you know, people with, you know, these real everyday problems that everyone can relate to is, you know, I owe my month's rent. I owe my first mortgage payment and so forth. And those stories kind of playing out on a day-to-day basis versus, you know, the holdup for all this, which is this border wall, which is an abstract thing to an awful lot of people around the country, that's going to be a difficult public relations battle for the president and the Republicans to win, I think.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, as we look at impacts around the Granite State, I want to bring Paul Breen into our conversation. He's the airport manager at Pease International Tradeport in Portsmouth. And Paul, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, a lot of Granite Staters will probably remember that Pease used to be an Air Force base. Just remind us what happens there now in terms of the mix of public and private operations, Paul.
Well, we are a very diverse airport. We have commercial scheduled service with Allegiant Air and Frontier Airlines. We also host the New Hampshire Air National Guard 537th Refueling Squadron, so it's a full Air Force base. And we also have quite a diverse general corporate aviation activity. We're the home of Plane Sense Fractional Ownership that does subscription service, fractional ownership for both corporate and leisure travel throughout the country and the world. And we have a fixed-based operator, Port City Air, that serves high-end corporate aircraft to
a lot of private plane travel as well as the Allegiant Air and so forth. And there's a visa processing center there too, right, Paul? What else do you have going on there at Pease?
On the International Trade Port, there is a U.S. passport processing center, yes.
So how much have federal workers at Pease been affected by the shutdown?
Well, we're in a unique situation that we are a joint-use airport. And our air traffic control is actually Department of Defense as opposed to being an FAA tower. So we are very fortunate there that we have manned 24/7 air traffic controls, and we will not be impacted by any kind of government shutdown as far as the air traffic tower at Pease. We are also fortunate that we have a TSA contract screening checkpoint in the airport terminal. We utilize a company named VMD that serves Rochester, New York Airport, Atlantic City Airport, and Portsmouth, New Hampshire. The good news is that their contract is funded right now. However, it is based on appropriations, and that funding could eventually run out. So we do worry about the longevity of the shutdown. And also, we have to consider our passengers coming from Orlando International, Punta Gorda Airport, and other airports all around the country that are being impacted by the TSA screening issues that are going on throughout the country.
You mentioned if it continues. So just spin that out a little bit more for us, please, Paul. You described where you're at right now. Where will you be at if this continues for another 2, 3, 4 weeks?
For another 2 or 3, 4 weeks, we would start to be concerned about, you know, how long can the VMD contract be funded? What will the morale be with their employees as far as just the unknown of you know, 2, 3 paychecks down the road? And also, our international traffic is all unscheduled. So any airlines that come in or private aircraft that come in from overseas, we rely on U.S. Customs to meet them at all hours of the airport. And as the government shutdown goes on, those hours would ultimately most likely be reduced. You would probably just see more of a normal business hour. So that would impact us greatly. Right now, we're happy to report that Customs is able to meet all flights at any time right now, but just how long can that sustain if some of the supporting dollars for that program are not flowing?
All right. Well, Paul, it's good to hear from you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That's Paul Breen. He's the airport manager at Pease International Tradeport in Portsmouth. And Matt and Dante, we got an email from Greg in Portsmouth also talking about what happens at Pease. He says, according to the website governing.com, New Hampshire has 7,630 federal employees. That's a lot bigger than the numbers that I've seen, but we'll set that aside for now. I've seen more like 2,700. But Greg says, of those, 475 are State Department, probably all at either the National Passport Center or the National Visa Center on Pease Air Force Base in Portsmouth. Greg says, happily, they are part of the Consular Affairs Bureau of State and are self-funded by fees collected for passport and visa issuance. Greg says, maybe more U.S. government departments, agencies, and bureaus should find ways to charge users for their services. Greg says this would not only avoid these kinds of shutdowns due to budget wrangles, but it would make it clear to the U.S. public how much some of these organizations do for us and how much these services cost. Greg, thank you for the email. And Matt, this gets to something we talked about earlier as we kind of combed through who's getting paid and who isn't, who's in the job and who isn't. What do you think about Greg's broader point, though? Rising user fees so that A, people still get paid, and B, as Greg says, the public recognizes the services that they are receiving. Go ahead, Matt.
Greg's point is an excellent one, which is we need to remember as citizens, we have the honor of paying taxes to our country to pay for these services in general. I think there's some subtle points that it's not clear. We want to get in the business of having individual government agencies having individual revenue streams. That's not the way our body politic has worked for generations. There's a general sense of you have the opportunity and obligation to pay into general taxes, and that through the Congress and the president working through how we want to appropriate those funds, we figure out what we want to pay for. But his point is a good one, which is we need to remember the taxes that we pay, those are the revenues that provide the safety at our borders, that provide the inspections on our roads and on our farms. And the other thing I'll underscore that both Greg and Paul from Pease articulated, it's important to keep in mind friction that has led to the shutdown is all about immigration policy, and Dante mentioned that earlier. One of the costs of the shutdown is the salient issues around U.S. immigration policy are not being addressed in this shutdown. The border wall, there's a broader set of issues around undocumented immigrants, what we're going to do with the Dreamers in the DACA program. The H-2B visas, there's very high demand for those. That affects a lot of farms and resorts in New Hampshire and Vermont as well, and high-skilled immigration. Those issues haven't gone away magically, and unfortunately, the political friction that is rising around the shutdown is going to make it harder, I think, to address these underlying real immigration issues.
What do you think, Dante?
Yeah, I'm sympathetic to the idea that, you know, like user fees would make people more aware of what government does. However, you know, as Matt said, you know, there's, you know, we're all taxpayers and paying for these government services and so forth, which are meant to work for the public's interest. So would concern me that user fees would kind of get away from that idea of the public interest. And I don't know that the public itself is unaware of what government does. It does need to be reminded occasionally the things that government does. And that's what we're going to see unfold over the next couple of weeks. I mean, there's a reason why government shutdowns tend to be, you know, shorter, not longer. I mean, there's a reason why the longest one we've ever had is a few weeks long, is because sooner or later, likely sooner, the public becomes irate. And the people they blame, and rightly so, is Congress and the president, their elected officials, because they're the ones who are supposed to, at a minimum, keeping government open.
Well, in terms of politics, Dante, you know, it's almost like a game of chicken, isn't it? But a careful game of chicken. Both the president and Congress, Democrats in Congress, want the public to blame the other one. At the same time, nobody wants to, you know, give in first. So it's tricky.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, it's, you know, Speaker Pelosi is driving down the road and President Trump is driving down the road in the opposite direction. And they're both aiming directly toward each other down the middle of the road. And the question is, which one is going to blink? And right now, you know, Speaker Pelosi feels confident that she has the backing of the public and that her party is not going to fracture. And that's a big difference between Democrats now and, let's say, Democrats back in, you know, Bill Clinton's day. Back, you know, a decade or two ago, Democrats were much more diverse. There were a lot more conservative Democrats who had mixed feelings about immigration. You look at the House majority now, they're much more unified that the wall is a bad thing, that immigrants are a good thing, and so forth.
Let's take some more calls and lots of emails coming in as well. And Ray is joining us from Londonderry. Hi, Ray. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. I am a retired United States Coast Guard captain, and proudly so. And we have Coast Guards, three Coast Guard ships at Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, and they're stationed in Newcastle. And I know that many of the folks in ships in Boston live in New Hampshire. I used to be one of them. Those folks are not going to get paid. And our junior enlisted people actually get paychecks below the national poverty line. Now, they gave a blank check to the United States. The only thing was they expected to be paid on time while they're out risking their lives, rescuing people, enforcing drug laws, and patrolling over in the Arabian Gulf as we speak, playing cat and mouse with the Iranians. And I just want to say that it's a national disgrace that these folks are going to have to worry about rent, food on the table, living in expensive coastal places. And the people of the United States have broken their contract with 42,000 dedicated military personnel. Well, and I'll take comments off the air, but I just wanted to vent a little bit.
Well, I appreciate the call, Ray. Now, Matt, just to clarify, I think the Defense Department, right, has its budget already, but I'm not quite sure about the Coast Guard, so I appreciate Ray's call. Matt, can you clarify?
Excellent point that Ray makes. I think the his rightly indignant tone, and he speaks of a national disgrace. I'll come back to the earlier exchange we had about thinking about how we fund our government agencies and, frankly, at what level. I will connect this back to the broader context. We are, despite having an economy that's pretty much at full employment, the current projections for this fiscal year 19 is that the federal government is going to run a deficit of close to $1 trillion. And that's what that represents is a sentiment that our country would like to be spending on a lot of things. And a lot of that is the compensation for the brave Coast Guard captains and other people that are helping keep us safe. But if we're not going to pay enough in taxes to pay the wages those people merit, we hear the concerns like those that Ray rightly articulates.
Well, and speaking of people who work in sensitive jobs in dangerous places, we had a caller leave us a voicemail who didn't want to use his name, but he said, "I am a furloughed federal worker in New Hampshire. I do sensitive work overseas in some of the least stable areas of the globe. And this furlough," this caller said, "is significantly impacting our work and setting us back." So thank you for that comment. And thank you also, Ray, for being with us. We'll hear from you after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. The This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. This hour, how the partial federal government shutdown is being felt here in New Hampshire. Send us your stories and your questions. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at @NHPRExchange. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Dante Scala, real quick, just before the break, we heard from Ray in Londonderry, retired Coast Guard, very upset about people, you know, who put themselves in harm's way, not being paid. And I had asked about the status of people who work for the Coast Guard. The Defense Department is getting funding. That already got taken care of. But what about the Coast Guard, Dante?
Yeah, so the Coast Guard actually falls under Homeland Security, which is not currently funded because Congress didn't pass appropriations for that. So it's Coast Guard is separate, you know, from the Defense Department. They were paid at the end of the year because they the government found a way to do that. But as Ray pointed out, starting, January 15th, not clear whether members of the Coast Guard will get a paycheck.
Okay. And again, Ray, we really appreciate your call. Lots of emails coming in too, gentlemen. Andrew in Lebanon says, Mascoma Savings Bank has created a loan product to assist furloughed federal employees to get through the shutdown. Andrew, that's good to know. Matt, this relates to what we talked about earlier. You know, at some point, federal employees won't be able to pay their bills, or they'll incur costs because they have to pull out of retirement savings, and you always take a hit for doing that. So there's at least one bank up in your area, Matt, that's trying to help out. But, you know, landlords need to pay their property taxes and pay for the heat. So it's tricky, isn't it?
It is tricky, and I will give a shout-out. Good on Mascoma Savings Bank for doing that for their customers and perhaps new customers. A big concern a lot of furloughed workers legitimately have is if they've got mortgage payments. And the online real estate firm Zillow ran some numbers, and they've estimated that the furloughed workers collectively across America owe a combined $250 million in monthly mortgage payments in the month that's approaching. So it's a telling example of the costs that this shutdown is creating, because we've got hundreds of thousands of workers that many of whom are like most of us in America, they don't have huge amounts of resources to draw on. And so paycheck to paycheck really matters for their ability to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads. And again, I'll come back to the theme of planning for the future. Is this the right job for me? I'm trying to save for my children for their education in the future. And so the impact on the morale of the workers is really important, I think, to keep in mind. But it's great when companies and organizations like Mascoma Savings Bank step in to help.
So, yeah, younger people looking at a career in federal service might go, seems a little risky. I don't think I want to go there. Mary
exactly.
in Plymouth sent us an email. She says, why is there no insurance available for federal employees for a shutdown with caveats for paying it back if you do not receive back pay? Wow, Mary, Dante, that would be tough politically, wouldn't it? That would be like creating a program, acknowledging right up front that Congress and the president are unable to get their act together.
Yeah, if it were.
It'd be like an admission of failure even before a failure started.
Right. It would be, right, especially if it were a public sort of thing that was included with, you know, salary and benefits, that there would be some sort of benefit like that, an insurance policy against the government, you know.
But Mary's right. We've
open.
Seen a lot of shutdowns in the past two decades. I mean,
right.
What,
Matt,
I don't know, five, six? I don't know.
Right. And as Matt pointed out, I mean, this doesn't get better as we go along. I mean, you know, how many of us can go through, you know, without a couple of paychecks? So the stories that are going to emerge isn't just like a one-day story or a one-week story. It's an each and every day story as long as this continues.
Well, and our producer, Christina Phillips, checked this out yesterday, and she reminds us that the New Hampshire Department of Employment Security has this statement on their website. Individuals who have been furloughed or temporarily laid off due to the government shutdown may file for unemployment benefits. So it may get to that point. Employment Security says federal wages are assigned to the state where your most recent official duty station is located. That has to do with federal workers who might work in Maine or Massachusetts and so forth. And from what I understand, if you do get that unemployment payment, but then you do end up getting back pay, you have to pay back. So it's a little bit confusing, but there is unemployment insurance for people who have been furloughed and who need the money now. So thank you, Mary, for that email. Here's another one from Billy, who says, has there ever been a shutdown where employees did not get back pay? whether they had to work or stay at home. Do you know, Matt, you know, most of the time federal employees get paid, but I think there have been at least one, if not two, shutdowns where people have not been paid, right?
I think that's right. You know, we'd have to go back and do a little fact-checking of that. And as Dante really pointed out, unfortunately, we've got several examples that we can look at. But a theme that I'll point out about this is people have gone back and look at studies. Some people think, well, at least we're saving the federal government money when we have these shutdowns. But actually, that turns out often not to be the case, in part because you do have the federal government that eventually pays back the salaries to the individuals who rightly were eager to work. And also the federal government, they end up not collecting some taxes and fees. So for the federal parks that are closed, you've got people who don't come to visit. You don't collect those user fees and things like that. And the government also, it has to make good on a lot of other payments. And sometimes if it makes payments to contractors late, those contracts require them to pay with interest. And so if one has a mindset, which is, well, at least we're trying to discipline the government and live within our means or some such things, a lot of research shows actually that's not the case, that shutdowns actually cost more than an open government.
Well, so we talked about federal employees, you know, maybe taking a hit if they're late on certain payments, but you're saying the federal government might also take a hit if it's late on certain payments.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think and one of the impacts is we rightly focus on the roughly 800,000 federal workers that are directly impacted by this. But there are unknown, I don't know how many, but thousands and thousands of businesses in America, small and large alike, that are contractors to the federal government. And so this the federal government for them is a client. It's a source of revenue. And so those businesses, that's part of the indirect cost, is if they're not engaging with the federal government as a contractor right now, they're not getting paid, and that's going to ripple into their employees and how they run their businesses.
Yeah, the contractors are pretty upset. And I read a quote from one the other day saying, you know, the federal employees will probably get paid back. Once in a while they don't, but they probably will. But the contractors, they just lose out because they don't get
right.
that contract money, and they, you know, have to lay people off or don't get paid. Go ahead, Dante. I can see you want to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, another thing, this gets back to an earlier point Matt made, is just the capacity of the government to operate needs to be maintained. And when it shuts down, it takes time to get the government back up to where it was before. I mean, take national parks as a case in point. A lot of national parks are open right now. They were kept open despite the fact that, you know, there isn't the staff there to maintain them. And so people go into the parks, and so there's trash all around the parks. And so there's all sorts of concern about what kind of damage is being done to the parks that's going to need to be repaired once the government shutdown is over. For example, the Joshua Tree National Park out in California, they actually have closed that down because of the damage that's been done to the kind of fragile ecosystem there.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Gentleman Mike Gazagian is with us. He is president of the union that represents TSA agents in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. Mike, thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So you're working without pay, is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, I am. It'll be 2 weeks Saturday.
And how is that affecting your home life, first of all?
Well, I mean, it's going to put a burden on my finances. I'll probably have to dip into my savings. My wife will have to pick up the slack, and nobody's happy about it.
Are most TSA workers working without pay? Is anybody getting paid on the TSA staff?
To my knowledge, no, nobody's getting paid. The officers, the frontline officers, have to come into work, and we expect to be paid in back pay. The back office, the mission support staff, administrative staff, they are furloughed, they are home, and they are not allowed to come to work.
How are people feeling about this? We've talked a lot about morale and the prospect of younger people reconsidering a career in federal service. What's the morale like there now, Mike?
Well, I mean, people are still coming to work. So I think a lot of the issue of sick outs, people calling out sick, that's kind of being overblown, at least in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. But people are feeling victimized, really, because it's really unfair that we're being thrown into the middle of a political fight that has nothing to do with us. And, you know, I see this as, if imagine like a public company like a Google or an Apple, if their CEO and their board of directors got into a disagreement over what kind of security system to put into their buildings, and then they went ahead and they shut down the company and laid off all the workers. you know, would the shareholders accept that? I would think they probably wouldn't. And at the next shareholder meeting, they'd probably all get thrown out. I think a lot of the people involved in this wouldn't be impacted if they missed a paycheck. You know, the decision makers in Washington. So we're stuck. We're being played basically as pawns in this political game, and our lives are being affected, and it's just profoundly unfair.
How has this affected air travel, Mike? I was talking to a couple of people this week, one who felt the screening for his flight home from Orlando was way too rushed, if you can believe it. Usually people complain about the wait, but he was concerned it was too fast. And then somebody else who came home from Phoenix recently who said it took forever. There were only two lines open for screening. He waited a long, long time. So how is this affecting the air travel experience?
It's going to differ from airport to airport. You know, staffing levels are always different at different airports. So I can't really speak to, you know, I can't give you a blanket answer to that. I know that in Massachusetts, things are going smoothly. In New Hampshire, apparently, they're also going smoothly. In Maine as well. We also cover Maine as the union local.
Okay.
But I think as time goes on, you know, I mean, the TSA has a lot of part-time employees. And, you know, we rely on these people to staff the lanes. And, you know, if we're in a great economy and there are a lot of options out there. And, you know, are people really going to continue to show up to a job where they're not going to be paid?
What's your message, Mike?
It's a big question.
Yeah. For the flying public, what message do you want to leave our listeners with?
I want to urge these people to contact their congressmen and their senators and really press the fact that they have to make a deal, and that it's not fair for the employees who are coming to work every day and doing their job as they signed up to do to have to be put through this. It simply isn't fair, and I think the public can put a stop to it. We can't. We're federal employees. We really have to stay neutral. We can't be political, but the public has to step in and help us out.
Okay. Mike, thank you very much for being with us.
Appreciate you having me.
That's Mike Gazagian. Again, he's president of the union that represents TSA agents in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. He's working without pay. Let's go back to our listeners. Jay is in Nashua. Hi, Jay. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
I'm here. Sorry. I just wanted to point out that federal workers are actually legally banned from striking. The Taft-Hartley Act of 1947 says that federal employees can't strike.
And so, Jay, you are a federal employee, am I guessing?
I am a federal employee. I am furloughed.
Yep.
The point I'm trying to make, what Mike, the TSA agent union boss, was just saying, was that, you know, they're not showing up. But, well, in certain positions, if you don't show up, you can put your pension at risk. And you can't, we can't, as federal employees, strike to let our grievances with management be known. It is illegal.
Right.
If you're told to show up and you don't show up, then you're AWOL. And if you're AWOL, you face disciplinary action. And if you face disciplinary action, you're putting your pension or your job at risk.
Okay. So don't do any of these sick outs that have gotten some attention. But as Mike told us, Jay, he says they're not really happening.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that in general, the general public needs to know we don't have, as federal employees, we don't have a recourse. If we're told to show up and work without pay, we have to show up and work without pay.
Jay, thank you very much for the call. We really appreciate it. And, you know, I'm hearing a lot of frustration from the people who've been calling in. You know, you heard it from Jay. You heard it from Mike. Matt, you've said this a couple times. You know, you've got some real concerns about how this may affect federal recruitment down the line. I wonder what you think, though, Matt, about the smaller ripple effects that we might see in communities, you know, people deciding not to go out to eat, not to go skiing, you know, these little micro decisions that may affect broader communities economically.
Boy, those micro decisions are real. And every day that this shutdown drags on, they will get larger in the aggregate. In terms of the economy, we're fortunate, not that we want to have these shutdowns, but we're fortunate that we have a pretty strong labor market. Again, we're very close to full employment in America. And yet, these costs start to accumulate. And so if you look at the people in the private sector that make these forecasts on how the U.S. economy is doing overall. In the past week, you see some of these analysts starting to tick back a little bit their estimates for economic growth in the fourth quarter of 2018 and moving into the first quarter of 2019. So those costs are real. And as you point out, it's costs for the local restaurants, it's costs for the beauty salons or a lot of the small businesses throughout New Hampshire and other communities throughout America. We feel this impact, and it's unfortunate because we all would like to be in an environment where the businesses are thriving and able to make decisions where they don't have this large amount of uncertainty that appears and kind of drops into their decision-making day-to-day.
So
those costs are real and they matter.
Economic forecasts, because of those little ripple effects, Matt, have already been dialed back a little bit because of the people who might not go to the beauty salon or order Chinese food?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's small amounts when you look at the numbers so far, in the sense that some analysts have dialed back their estimates of economic growth by a tenth of a percent or two-tenths of a percent, which sounds little, but in a $20 trillion economy, that's a lot of income and ultimately jobs for a lot of businesses throughout New Hampshire and throughout the country.
Dante Scala, closing out with you, again, I know you can't predict, but I wonder how you think this might roll out, what you're going to be looking at over the next coming days and weeks in terms of ending this thing?
Public pressure is important, both in terms of people expressing their opinions to pollsters, but also in terms of, say, public demonstrations and so forth. I mean, Jay's point is well taken about federal workers not being able to strike and so forth, but hard to imagine that the creators of that law thought of a situation where, workers could be out of work and told to go to work without being paid for weeks or even months. I mean, that's kind of uncharted territory for us as a country.
What's the longest shutdown that we've had, Dante?
Well, basically, it's been about 3 weeks. We'll be passing that this weekend. We'll be passing that mark.
It doesn't feel quite as long, though, because of the holiday. A lot of stuff doesn't happen over the holiday anyway. But
technically it's this weekend. Right,
okay.
Exactly.
All right. Well, both of you, we really appreciate you joining us. Lots more to talk about. Dante Scala, thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome.
That's Dante Scala, professor of political science at UNH, a fellow at the Carsey School of Public Policy. Matt Slaughter, we always appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura. Always a pleasure.
That's Matt Slaughter, dean of the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. And remember, our conversation continues online on Facebook and at nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.